So listen, your toilet is massively gross. Like, it's grosser than you think. In fact, bacteria and viruses can hang around in the toilet bowl even after multiple flushes. And I recently found the easiest way to clean my toilet. Blue Land Sustainable Toilet Cleaner Tablets. Just drop, watch it fizz, brush, and flush. It is truly that simple. No more scrubbing for hours. Plus, the tablets are plastic-free. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet with the same powerful clean that you're used to. Blue Land products are effective and affordable, and their toilet tablets are proven to work on a wide range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, lime scale, and hard water. And you can even get more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Blue Land has a special offer for our listeners. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
To Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. John, I heard about the terrible news about the Awesome Coffee Club.
Oh.
I heard that it got decaffeinated.
Oh, no, you've made a mistake, Hank. It got decaffeinated.
Oh, it's
that's
beautiful.
Right. That's right. We're making decaf coffee. AwesomeCoffeeClub.com. Hank.
Yes.
We were just talking on the phone and you were like, hold on, before we start recording, I have to think of a joke. And then you said, oh boy. And then the little voice came from on high and said, call ended. And I was like, were those the last words my brother will ever speak to me?
Oh, like, boy.
And then
a rock just came through the window.
Well, there was like 45 seconds before I called you back, because it is always me who has to call you back.
Oh, yeah, I was just looking at jokes.
I know. Like earlier in that conversation, it happened previously as well, and you hung up on me, and I waited like 2 minutes, and then I was like, I guess I'll call him back. And I, but anyway,
it's true.
So
you're the initiator. Like that,
I know.
There has to be someone.
You count on me to be the older brother.
It's good to divide it up so that you're not both calling each other at the same time.
Sure.
You always call.
So anyway, my point is that you said, oh boy, and then it said call ended. And in the intervening minute before we reconnected, I had two full kind of thoughts. You know how you can like speed through, you could kind of speed run a worry. That's my specialty, actually. Mm-hmm.
You
think that like Cosmic is good at speed running Super Mario Brothers. You should see me speed run contamination OCD fears. It's incredible. But
okay, what did I do? How did I die?
Well, so first I was like, he died, and he said, oh boy, because the gigantic rock fell on his garage and he is no more, and this is terrible, and what a loss for the world, and but all more importantly for me. And then the second thought was, what if Hank just got so kind of overwhelmed that he reached the breaking point all at once and he just said, oh boy. And then he just disappeared.
Like, call ended. Exactly. Like my phone disappeared.
Like the proverbial father going out for a gallon of milk never to return.
I vanish.
He's just gone.
I am now proof that matter can be destroyed. it was too much energy. It all just sort of, and then it was gone.
Anyway, I'm really glad you're here. Really, really glad, because I've become newly aware that at any moment you might not be. So
yeah.
Thank you for being here. Well, I want to say a quick apologies for last week's episode where we completely stopped answering questions from our listeners, providing you with all the week's news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon.
Failed to do
the sponsor reads and incredibly failed to do the Project for Awesome messages. It was a special episode. We didn't do the sponsor read?
That's so weird.
Fell in love with our format, people. That's what happened. We just fell in love.
I'm so curious. I haven't thought to look if anybody's had thoughts about doobly-doo. I did ask Craig about Doobly-Doo, and he said this seems like it would be hard.
Yeah, you know, the main thought that I've seen about Doobly-Doo from people is, why don't you do Doobly-Doo with Dropout or Doobly-Doo with Nebula, which I could not agree with more. Why?
That's a good point.
Doobly-Doo with Netflix. Tell Netflix, hey, y'all, you know what's wrong with your format? Y'all are spending like $150 million making a Martin Scorsese movie. For $150 million, we'll give you three streaming platforms. We'll give
Here's
you Paramount
what's
Plus. Give us
Here's
$150 million. We'll go out. We'll buy Paramount Plus. We'll get their whole library. But then more importantly, we're going to do this thing called Doobly-Doo. It's got game shows on it, but they're like game shows filmed in a basement.
We're going to give you 326 episode seasons. It's going to be fun.
You could make, that's fine. You could make 1 2-hour movie, or you could make 3 million minutes of high quality content.
Yeah.
All right, oh, Hank, let's actually answer some questions from our listeners this time.
I think that's a great idea. I don't have the questions open. And
wow.
We've been talking for so long that I'm like hungry now, and I'm not sure I can do this, but I'm going to try.
Okay, we've got a Project for Awesome message to read from last week from Allison from Madison, Wisconsin, to Lily and Becca. To my dearest Lily and Becca, we all miss you terribly and hope this message brings you the spot of joy you needed today. The Spice Cabinet requests you visit soon for car smashing and book reading, sending all our love across the country. That's lovely. I don't know what any of it means, but it was a great Project for Awesome message. And if you want us to record a Project for Awesome message that will air sometime this year for you, check out the Project for Awesome, projectforawesome.com, February 17th to February 19th. Hmm.
John.
Yes.
This first question comes from Kim, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, I was thinking about ants this morning because ants are great, and also because I've heard that the amount of ants on Earth weigh as much as the amount of people on Earth. Genetically speaking, though, only the queen ant can reproduce, and all the worker ants are more like wireless appendages. So does that mean that anthills are actually just one person? Follow up, if I may, what would the best and highest use of wireless appendages be? On a whim, Kim." We've got a number of issues, but I want to bring up something else, unless you have something immediately you'd like to say.
I don't.
I recently was on Twitter and I said, isn't it sort of cool that we, like, of all the billions of years the Earth has been around, we happen to live at the same time as the largest organism on Earth?
Yeah.
And then a bunch of people were like, which one is that, Hank? I was thinking of the blue whale. Which,
but you should never specify, Hank. That's one of the great rules. If you want to increase engagement, don't specify. So
people just
can argue.
Like, they can have a fight in the comments. And I did walk away from Twitter at that time, so they fought without me. And I didn't see this all until the next day. And a number of people were saying that Pando, the Aspen Grove, is the largest organism on Earth. Certainly is in contention for the title.
Great Kim, Aspen Grove. Some people say the best.
Kim here would like to say that maybe all individual ants are not individual ants. They are extensions of the queen. Now, your reasoning, first of all, there are other ants that are involved in the reproduction, specifically the males. I think they're drones or something like that.
Right.
And they're the ones, they and multiple drones are fertilizing along with the queen.
They're loaning the juice.
They do the juice loans, and this works out.
Guess it's more of a gift.
To have a bigger diversity.
You don't get it back.
Bigger diverse, thank goodness, of ants in the hill, and that's healthy for the anthill. But I do think there is something here, which is that, like, in what way is the ant hill not all just one organism? And in that case, in what way is not every organism on Earth not just one organism? And in that case, am I
the biggest organism on Earth? You're part of the largest organism on Earth, which is the only organism on Earth, which is this gross, breathing, flopping, slimy, wet
film
on the surface of the Earth.
I dropped you.
Hank just abandoned me.
I gotta turn my heater off. I forgot it was gonna turn on.
While Hank is gone, I'm gonna tell you about what this question made me think of, which is, lately, I've been thinking every time a billionaire does something really weird or unpleasant, or really anytime anyone does something in an attempt to like achieve immortality or to like make their mark upon the human story or whatever. I've been thinking that I would like to be able to go to their house and sit next to them on the couch and just whisper in their ear, you know, we're just ants, right? Like, you know that like, you know, like when you look at an anthill, you never think like, oh man, that ant is very impressive. That ant is caring so much more than the other ants. And look at all that it's doing. It's really advancing ant kind. We're just ants, okay? Just be nice to each other. Zoom out a little bit and look at us. We're trying so hard. Like, each of us. Can't you just try to be nice to us? We're just ants.
What's really interesting to me, I also have these impulses to like, what is the thing that I'm like, what's the best use of my time or resources or skills and talents?
Yeah.
And when I try and figure out like what, like, and I don't, and I usually don't think about it. I usually do what I think is most valuable. And it's like very subconscious. It's very culturally impacted. It's like it, when I investigate it a little bit, it's usually just the thing that other people are focused on. And so like, why are you on Twitter, Hank? All the other people are. Must be good, because we're social people. We're like ants in a lot of ways. And we go to where the people go, and we start to pay attention to and value the things that other people pay attention and value.
Yeah.
And that's not bad. Like that's,
I feel similarly.
There's good news about that.
I'm worried that we're going to answer this question for the full hour, because I feel similarly that when people are like, Indianapolis sucks, I always want to say like, oh no, this just isn't your anthill. Like, so you don't live here. You came and like looked at our anthill and you were like, I don't like your anthill. And we're like, okay. Like, we do.
It's different.
You go back to your anthill, which isn't home to more dead vice presidents than any other location on earth. Wow, cool. What a great anthill you have over there in New York City.
Bigger problem. If this were actually anthill, we would just murder you. Like, just coming over here, you can't show your face in a different anthill.
It's true.
What are you thinking?
That's true. This is another one of my recent very passionate arguments, which is that all the other animals would be just as bad or worse at being sentient as we are. Like, we're terrible. I'm not trying to like say anything good about us, but you think kangaroos are going to do a better job? Like, you think kangaroos are going to handle nuclear weapons responsibly?
Have you seen a kangaroo?
Have you ever seen a kangaroo?
They're like, what is like, the animal that would be best at this?
A golden doodle, maybe?
They just are nice.
Yeah, the golden doodles would just be like, good God, everybody.
They would just be like licking each other, running around, goofing off.
Say.
But then nobody, but who would grow the food?
Nothing would get done. You know?
If we all converted into golden doodles, everybody would be very happy for 3 days.
You think golden doodles are going to like figure like out the fundamental forces of the universe?
Yeah, a 3-day utopia. And then just a bunch of really hungry dogs.
Just this, right? Then you get real hungry. And then you find out that actually like golden doodles aren't any better than us. Not when they're hungry.
Yeah. It's very true. Oh, no. Oh, God. What were we talking about?
I don't know. Let's move on to the next question. I think we did a great job answering that one. Uh-huh. I also have no idea which question document we're using, so it's sort of thrilling for me. I think we're using different ones.
Are we? I have one very specifically. It says recording this day, 1/23/23.
Oh, I just found that one. Okay, great. Matt and Jessica ask, Dear John and Hank, we're doing a crossword puzzle and we're stuck. The clue is Mars, prefix, and the word is 4 letters long, and we know blank, 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 O. Thank you, Matt and Jessica, for reaching out with the kind of, you know, breaking news question that we're best at answering here at Dear Hank and John. Like, if you have an emergency that needs dealt with today, don't call 311.
Yeah, we were supposed to use
Email
these questions
us.
Last week, too. So,
what is it, Hank? Is it Morrow?
I think that I know.
Okay. Well, tell me. I'm not going to guess.
It's not funny. I think it's...
I don't want it to be funny.
Like Aereo, like Aries. Aereo.
Oh, A-R-E-O. Like area. I can, as somebody who makes crossword puzzles, I can picture the problem that the creator had that led to Aereo instead of area. There we go. We answered the question. Next question. Hank, this is the episode where we answer lots of questions.
Good.
To make up for last
like that.
Time.
Give me a bunch of Mars trivia. I'll slam them out.
All right. You give me one.
John, this next question comes from Kai, and I think that you'd be very good at it. Right. I've currently been struck by a cold, and not to be dramatic, but this virus in my nose is ruining my life. As I language in my self-pity and my inability to breathe out of both of my nostrils, I was struck by a thought. Mm-hmm. When olden times people, like pre-germ theory, got colds, did they think they were gonna die? How did they know if they were or weren't dying? Thanks. Bye-bye, Kai.
Yeah.
I have this thought fairly frequently when I'm very sick. I'm like, is this it?
Right.
Like, how do I know the difference between this feeling, which is very bad, and the one where I'm actually maybe not going to make it out?
Well, this was one of the central
I knew he had it.
The doctors did that they could do because they had a lot of experience with people dying.
Sure.
So often they would be like, this is Yeah, there are sort of like three categories. I can fix this, I can't fix this, and fare thee well.
Right. Yeah.
And
for clarity, most of the things in the first category were actually in the second and third categories.
Well, almost everything in the first category was actually in the second category, right?
Yeah, like, okay.
I can give you some, but there were things that were helpful in the history of medicine,
sure.
In the humoral era, and in Chinese medicine and in indigenous American medicine. There were things that worked. There were also a lot of things that didn't work. But because doctors had a fair amount of experience, or like medical practitioners, however they would describe themselves, had a lot of experience with different kinds of ailments, they often did know how bad it looked, or they knew like, oh, if I've had patients like this in the past, they die. But you do see people worry in historical memoirs that something might be portending their death. You see a lot of people trying to use the power of positive thinking. That's like one of the heartbreaking things about reading a lot of tuberculosis memoirs, like people who lived in these, tuberculosis sanitariums in the 19th and 20th centuries. Like, there's a lot of sort of like attempts at positive self-talk despite the odds and the miseries and all that. But I would also say, Hank, that it seems probable that people in the past had a little more tolerance for discomfort than we have.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Like, I've noticed that. Yeah,
I don't exactly understand it, but it seems like they must have.
Yeah, well, I think that it's an experience thing. You have more discomforts. You'd be like, well, this isn't as bad as that other one.
You start to be maybe
whereas,
a little more
comfortable. Whereas when I had COVID, I was like, this is as bad as it gets because it's as bad as it's gotten for me.
Yeah. I mean, when I had meningitis, I was like, the idea that you could live with this without pain medication is the idea is unbearable. You know what I mean? Like, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next question. This question comes from Anonymous, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I live in Canada and I work in healthcare. My province is currently experiencing provincial government policies that are undermining public health, and premiers are minimizing the influence of experts, which is very troubling. As people who live in America... No, that wasn't the question. As people who work to better systems, such as your work with Partners in Health, how do you maintain hopefulness for the work you do within inequitable systems? Overthrowing systems isn't off the table, but other ideas are appreciated. Anonymous. I think if you look at the history of completely overthrowing systems, that often doesn't work great.
It's very so. One of the things that John and I talk about sometimes is that like there's the grand scheme, but there's also the fact that you don't live in the grand scheme; you live in now.
Right.
So as far as now goes, it like there are these people who have prejudices and they have fears and they also have ambitions that that they can achieve by preying on the prejudices and fears of other people, and they create they create systems that hurt people because of that,
right?
And I don't know what to do about them, except to recognize that things because of that, things cannot change as fast as they want, and that the world is not going to be the just and fair place that it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, one of the things that I have done is I've read about this. I read a book called High Conflict, which is about the ways that conflict moves from productive to unproductive and how to move it back, and how very hard that is, but how it happens over and over and over again, even in cases where people are literally killing each other. You know, wars end and people share those spaces that they once killed each other inside of. And so we move out of that conflict. I also read a book by David McRaney called How Minds Change, which is very helpful in that it outlines that people are only to some extent capable of having different thoughts than the ones that they have right now. Like it is not easy and slow path. And like, it's so frustrating, like that the world cannot be just and fair. But there are, it is very helpful to sort of understand some of the mechanisms, like actual physiological mechanisms of how brains work, and the kinds of conversations that lead people into feeling safe enough to even question their own perspectives, which they often do not feel. And I think conflict in particular is a place where you are least likely to be able to, you know,
when you're in
your
the middle of that feeling of high conflict.
Yeah.
But
so,
like,
so reading about that has been helpful to me because it has been made me a more productive person in those conversations, I think. But it does not make the frustration go away. And it does not make the injustice go away.
Right. I think that if you stop at a place of being pissed off about injustice and all you can feel in the face of injustice is hopeless, it sucks. It's really miserable. Like it's a really difficult way to go through life. And I think there is evidence, not that the world becomes just, but that it can become more just. If you look at Canada's history of how inequitable Canada's healthcare system was 100 or 200 years ago, I think you see that there is a possibility of things getting better. The fact that there's a possibility of things getting better, I think critically also implies that there's a possibility of things getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I get frustrated sometimes when all the, the utopian crowd is like, oh, these are problems that like will naturally fix themselves. Like, no, these are problems that fix themselves because Anonymous is working in healthcare, right? Like these are problems that get addressed because millions of people are coming together to make frustrating, incremental, little by little change over decades and over centuries. And I think we should be pissed off. I think we should be pissed off about injustice. I think we should be pissed off about the places, and there are many of them, where the world is moving backwards. Mm-hmm. That's infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that the correct response to that is not hopelessness.
I totally agree. I was just listening. I wasn't thinking.
I'm glad you agree with me. That's all that matters. I just want my brother to agree with me.
We need to find more points of disagreement, John, for sure.
Yeah, I'm a little frustrated with that as well. I feel like you haven't done a good job of being annoying recently. And when we do disagree, it's always kind of fake and people can tell that it's fake. And I would like to have some real hardcore disagreements that are real.
I bet we could find some.
I would like to.
All right. What about the divinity of Christ? That's a joke. We shouldn't get into that on a public podcast. For sure. I think that people should believe what they feel is helpful.
Well, it's not just what I feel is helpful. It's what I feel is true, but we don't have to get into it. I will. I don't think Christ needs to be divine for you.
That's great. I love that. I love that for us.
All right. I love that for us too. Rachel writes, Dear John and Hank, I've recently been getting more fiber in my diet as I've been dealing with some stomach issues, and I've been looking up ways to do so. I understand how fruits and vegetables and things is, like bran have fiber, but like, what is fiber and how do fiber powder and pills work? Oh, Rachel, have you come to the right place?
Yeah.
Hank Green is America's leading expert in how fiber works.
So there's a bunch of good things that fiber does for you.
Even is fiber?
So fiber is just, for the most part, it's cellulose. It's indigestible sugars. So
wait, I thought you told me not to eat styrofoam peanuts.
Well, you absolutely could if they were prepared as if they were food.
Those ones have
been sitting around and we're not prepared in situations that were food safe.
Okay.
So there could be pests, there could be rodents.
Wait, I thought you told me not to eat grass, which I think, if I recall, is made entirely of cellulose.
Yeah, I mean, grass also is not prepared in a food safe situation, but you can eat grass. And in fact, you do all the time because wheat is a grass and so is corn.
Oh, yeah. I've been
through this, John.
I bet you have. I can feel it. I can feel the like old man is tired of explaining to young people why they can't eat grass energy coming, just reverberating from your body right now.
So the thing about fiber is that it seems to be most good for you when it is sort of like in its the forms where it's just in your food normally. So for example, like having orange juice and then having the commensurate amount of fiber as would be in an orange is kind of less good for you than just having an orange with the fiber and the like, because it sort of moderates the sort of sugar bomb effect, and it creates like the whole digestion process happens more slowly.
That's interesting.
And sort of more naturally.
Yeah.
But it can sometimes in sort of modern situations just very much depending on your diet, it can be hard to get the amount of fiber that your body existed inside of a system that had a certain amount of fiber. And then now it exists inside of a different system. And, you know, we're not going to wait for evolution to catch up. So you can throw some fiber in there. And the main way we do this was with psyllium husks, and they grow psyllium specifically because it produces a lot of good quality indigestible fiber that they can just grind up. And then they put it into pills, or they put it into Metamucil, or powders that you can mix into your drink.
Mm.
And that basically, in that circumstance, the there are a few things that it might do. Like there is like it might impact your cholesterol in positive ways. The main thing it does is that it creates a better poop. Like it just it forms your stool into a more comfortable,
just a happier poop.
Firmness, like it's not too hard and it's not too soft, it's not too small and it's not too big. It just gives your colon the material to work with to package your waste in the way that it wants to package it for sort of the ideal experience at the toilet.
I love the idea of it. It's like it gives you the material to work with. Like your colon is still writing the novel, but the fiber is the alphabet.
Right. Yeah, like it's gonna do the work one way or the other. But if it's got a bigger vocabulary, then it's gonna be a better book.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically the exact rule that like it's basically how ChatGPT came to be. Like, sure, it's better.
Poop GPT.
It's better if it's natural, of course. But like, if it can't be natural, there's always poop GPT. I think, by the way, we should sell Metamucil, and it is just Metamucil, but it's under our exciting new brand, Poop GPT.
I mean, I have had this idea for a while now. There are a couple of things that I would put in a powder that aren't just psyllium husk.
Okay.
I
feel $1 million idea coming on. I'm very excited. I love a consumable.
Oh man, I could sell the crap out of a supplement fiber, couldn't
Hank,
I?
You tell me
about, because it'd be really good for
Hank,
you.
Tell me about this fiber supplement that you want to sell.
Do
right
we,
now.
Do you,
tell me what's in it
what
other than psyllium
last
husks.
Time. You
tell me what's in it other
me,
than psyllium husks. And
you
then,
baited me into telling you the idea, and then we couldn't talk about anything else.
All right, we gotta do a Project for Awesome message real fast before Hank tells me about this psyllium husk idea. This Project for Awesome message comes from Megan, who writes, "Dear Megan, you gave too many spoilers last year. The best place you can be is right here. You are here and you are alive, and this is the best of all possible worlds. Breathe in the unknown and bask in the uncertainty of whatever is going to come. Let me know how it goes. Love you. Last year's Megan. P.S. Nice. Send my love to Baxter. He is the best thing to happen to me." Well, that's nice. I don't know if Baxter is a person or an animal.
I feel strongly that Baxter is an animal, but
well, you know,
now I feel bad for having said it.
Sarah has an uncle, Baxter.
Yeah, no, I've met
and
Baxter.
And he listens to the pod, so he's devastated.
Yeah, there's also the character from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I don't think I know about the character from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I don't know
Turtles.
Why that one stuck around, but he...
April's
as
love
far as I can, as far as I can remember, no, Baxter did not was not like the kind of guy you'd want to have around.
Oh, he was a naughty man.
Yeah, I think. Well, no. Yeah, he was a fly. He was a man who turned into, he was like the fly, but it was
he was the fly of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle universe. Yeah. This is a great attempt to get me to get off of the
topic.
Which
reminds me, John, this podcast is brought to you by Baxter from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
He was a fly man, probably made in the exact same way as the fly with Jeff Goldblum, but more comedic and not the kind of guy. I think he was a big nerd, if I remember correctly.
Oh, God forbid. Today's podcast, of course, is also brought to you by my wife's Uncle Baxter. My wife's Uncle Baxter, great guy. Went skiing with him once in Vermont. Very, very funny man. Loved
me. Nice.
Gave us 18 highball glasses inscribed with our initials when we got married. And I remember saying to Uncle Baxter, and we didn't register for these, and he said, "You'll need them." And he was right.
Ah, nice.
He was absolutely 100% right. He's it's actually
you talk
only...
about those highball glasses. Whenever I bring one out, you're like, Baxter.
I know. Those are Uncle Baxter's highball glasses. It's the only wedding present I regularly use.
This podcast is also brought to you by the world's largest organism. The world's largest organism.
Oh, yeah.
You.
It needs a marketing budget for sure. We need a better marketing budget for the world's largest organism. And of course, today's podcast is brought to you by PoopGPT. PoopGPT. Hank's about to tell me about it.
After the ads that actually will run now.
Right.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Thrive Market.
T-H-R-I-V-E is how that's spelled.
You may or may not be like me. Here's a thing I know about myself. If I put it in my house, I'm going to eat it fast. In no time flat. And so I like to shop in a way that makes sure that the kinds of foods that are in my home are the kinds of food that should be in my body. You know what helps out with that is having a go-to grocery and household essentials thing that I can, that just like pops up on my phone and it's like, "Hey, do you want to order your monthly thing?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And then I pick the things that I want in my house and I don't pick the things that I don't want in my house in the moments when I actually have self-control, which is not when I'm standing in front of the pantry. Thrive Market's super great, whether you're looking for organic kid snacks, low sugar alternatives, or gluten-free pantry essentials, which I absolutely am. And those, the pretzel bites with the peanut butter inside of them, to make my wife so happy. She's like, "I can finally have peanut butter pretzels again after developing a gluten allergy." It's fantastic. And as a Thrive Market member, you save money on every single grocery order. On average, you can save over 30% each time. They even have a little deals page that changes like every day, and you can go and see it and see like, maybe I want to try out some new fun thing. They got all kinds of brands on their website. They got Amy's, Banza, Burt's Bees. They got Mike's Hot Honey, Oatly, Olipop, Poppy, Salt. When you join Thrive Market, you are also helping a family in need with their one-for-one membership matching program. You join, they give. Join in on the savings with Thrive Market today and get 30% off your first order, plus a free $60 gift. Go to thrivemarket.com/dearhank for 30% off your first order, plus a $60 gift. That's Thrive Market, T-H-R-I-V-E market.com/dearhank. And they have told me to say it one final time, even though at this point it seems like a lot. thrivemarket.com/dearhank.
So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank.
So it's very rare when we hit something on SciShow that actually does the thing that it says on the package.
Sure, of course.
And that has happened two times. So usually we're like, here's this new craze. It doesn't do very much as far as we can tell. People have studied it. Here are the studies. It doesn't seem to do very much. There was a study that happened once, but it seems to have maybe been a statistical anomaly.
Right.
Which happens a lot. And you publish the statistical anomaly, and then you end up sort of chasing your tail for a little bit until you realize it didn't actually do much.
Right.
Things that seem to do things include fiber.
Uh-huh.
Which is good for your poop.
Yep.
Lion's mane mushroom. Which seems to be legitimately good for brain health.
Oh.
We don't really know why, but it's like helps keep nerves healthy.
Okay.
I started taking it when I was having shingles, just because we made this episode about it, and I was like, shingles is a nerve problem. So
all right.
I'll start doing that. And then the other thing is, there was a study that there were these individually some interventions that had shown really small effects, but when you put them all together, they had a much larger, very noticeable dose-dependent effect, which is, placebo-controlled, et cetera. And it was exercise, which you cannot put into a powder, unfortunately.
That's very
unfortunate.
You
just have to do that. Ugh. Vitamin D, which you can, and then fish oil, which probably would be also a little bit tricky to get into the powder. But that was a clear decrease in odds of cancer, and it seemed to me like I should be taking these things. This study I believe in at this point, and so I should be doing this, but I'm not, because I always forget to take my Metamucil, or I forget to take my lion's mane, and but if I had it all in one thing and I could do it every morning, I feel like I would do it.
Right. Hank, I mean, I'll be honest with you, an actual evidence-based fiber supplement would be amazing. First off, I don't think there's any reason why Metamucil should own the fiber supplement world.
No, they don't. There's lots of others.
But my point is that, do the others give their profit to charity?
Oh! Coming back around. Now we got the real juice in the tank.
Yeah. Awesome Poop GPT Club.
Oh, boy. I'm going to want a bunch of people at me with a good idea, Hank. With the best brand name for this idea, because it's not Poop GPT.
It's probably not Poop GPT, my heart wants it, but I think that my heart says yes, my head says no. My head says that Poop GPT is never going to be a $1 billion charity brand. Mm-hmm. They didn't call it Newman's GPT when they were naming the salad dressing,
Yeah. So it's evidence-based.
So funny for some reason. Newman's GPT. I love the idea of a ChatGPT competitor coming out and it's like, hey, it's me, Nell Newman, Paul Newman's daughter. Do you really want to trust your AI to people who are going to spend the profit on making themselves richer? Or do you want to trust my new ChatGPT, Newman's own GPT? This is a very good idea, Hank. I mean, unfortunately, it's maybe the best idea you've ever had. Why?
It's been bumping around in there for so long. I just had never said it out loud.
I can't believe we had the idea for you to get a brand deal with Metamucil, but we didn't have the idea for you to just take away Metamucil's market share
and give the money to charity. The idea of just a fiber supplement on its own wasn't that good, you know?
It's pretty good.
There's so many of them, and they're all like funded by venture capitalists, and they're like, there's so many. There's a bunch of these.
That to me is a sign that it's a good idea, because none of those venture capitalists are going to give their...
Yeah, but I don't want to fight with them.
I guess I hear you, but I also disagree with you. You are fighting with Big Sock, you know?
You're
taking down all the sock venture capitalists, which there are a surprising number of, actually.
I was in the store the other day.
It's actually sort of shocking, the number of sock venture capitalists, more than you'd think. Same with coffee.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the sock business. I keep going deeper and finding new ones.
And so we don't mind being at war. I don't mind being at war with Big Coffee. We don't mind being at war with Big Sock. Why not go to war with Big Fiber? Big Fiber. Stop giving your money to Big Fiber. We've got the fiber solutions for you.
Well, it can't just be fiber. That's the thing. If it's bigger than fiber, then it makes sense to me.
It's bigger than fiber is an amazing, amazing catchphrase.
No, it's close. It's something like that. It's getting there.
That makes me think that this is really a thing. It's bigger than fiber. I love it. Oh, God. I'm tempted to not answer another question, but let's answer one more before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon.
Yes.
Kate asks... Dear John and Hank, what does have a good one mean? A good drive home from the store? A good day? A good rest of your life?
Oh,
pumpkins and penguins.
This
Kate.
Is the thing. That's the thing that's, about have a good one. It's harder to do wrong.
Yeah. That's like how when I was a kid, I remember I would hear my dad anytime he would like see somebody. He didn't say have a good one. He would say take care. And I would always be like, what? From what? But if you just take out the preposition, you solve the problem.
Yep.
Have a good one.
And you decide.
You decide what kind of one, what constitutes a good one for you.
Can I ask you a question that's related to this question?
Absolutely.
When is it okay to compliment someone is it ever okay to just toss out what I think is a quality compliment to a complete stranger?
Okay, so I'm just going to tell you right now, you're veering on old men. Why can't I tell ladies to smile more?
That's not it. That's
you're
not
veering it. On it. That's why I'm just going to be honest.
So
I'm
is it just guys? Can word. I compliment guys? Strangers? Strange guys?
Same issue. Same fundamental problem. What you can say is a compliment on a choice. This is my opinion.
Yeah.
You can say a compliment on a choice, but not if it can easily be seen as objectifying.
Right. Well, the other day
I think you can give a compliment on somebody's ideas. Like whenever somebody says something that I find unusually interesting, I do try to say, I think that's a very good observation. And that is a compliment, but it's not a compliment that makes anyone hopefully feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. The other day I was walking down my neighborhood street and there was a woman who had clearly just been to the grocery store and she was walking her groceries home.
Yeah.
And I looked at her and I had the thought, she looks like she's ready to take on the day. And I was like, I want to say that to her. I want to be like, you look like you're ready to take on the day. Because then I thought, I'd like someone to say that to me.
Well, first off, you don't. You don't look like you're ready to take on the day. I hate to tell you, but you don't.
I know.
You look
that's
like,
the thing.
You look
that's
tired.
I want them to have misinterpreted the situation and to think that I'm ready to take on the day, even though I'm not.
So I think that if you're over 80, you can say you look ready to take on the day. Absolutely. But I think you've got to hit that 80th birthday where you're allowed to become a sort of... a genial older gentleman who has maybe a catchphrase, like not top. I was the first one that came to mind was top of the morning to you. You look ready for the day.
Yeah, but not that.
But not that one. You got a couple. But the good news is you got like 30 years to come up with your catchphrase.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm gonna
be a fun older gentleman.
Oh, I really want to be an eccentric old man. It's hey-o.
I want to put on a plaid suit every morning.
What was it you said to me? when this call started. I don't remember. It was so long ago.
I don't know.
You said, oh, God.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Maybe your catchphrase will be what you said to me right before hanging up on me. Oh, no.
That's everybody likes to hear that one. Just like see a person. Oh, no. You know what I said and to this woman instead?
What?
I said, careful out there, because it was really slippery.
Oh, that's a great one. I love careful out there. Careful out there is like take care, but it's even more specific. It's just like, well, the only thing about careful out there, now that I think about it, is that maybe it's creepy. You know, like maybe it seems like there's a threat and it's me. You don't want that. You don't want that.
Yeah.
You don't want that. I don't, maybe you can't do careful out there. That's what I like. Yeah. And maybe heyo is too aggressive. Yeah,
if you're like 80 years old, though, and you're not a threat anymore.
Yeah.
Very, very clearly. You could definitely. You never know, though.
You never know. I don't know. I think you can compliment somebody's choice of orange juice. I think you can be like,
I love orange juice.
Oh, you could be like, I notice you've got a really high quality fiber supplement that also uses evidence-based strong studies to add other ingredients, including lion's mane mushrooms.
That's right.
And then you can be like, you know who makes that? It's me. Hi.
Nice socks.
I'm the solution. It's me.
Those are my
nice socks. I made your socks. Yeah, maybe that's what you should say, Hank. Maybe that should be your catchphrase. Just walk it along.
You got to sign up for Newman's GPT as well.
That's right. You got to make sure your whole consumptive life is rebuilt around raising money for charity instead of enriching the already rich.
Boy, well, I don't think we did a great job.
No, it wasn't our best episode, but to be fair, it was better than last week. Nobody liked the idea of us boxing together, which is devastating for me.
I think I figured it out. Why?
Okay.
Because boxing is actually quite violent, and most people kind of don't like that.
There's a lot of people in our audience who aren't boxing fans, which was a big surprise to me. I thought they were mostly professional boxing fans.
I was
stunned. I thought that we were looking at a lot of professional boxing fans.
Mm-hmm.
So, my bad. I'd like to be able to promise
so
you that
happy.
I won't participate in any celebrity boxing tournaments, but I'd like to be able to promise
16 weeks to glory is still a thing. It's just, what's the glory? Because boxing is great because it is hilarious.
It's
a lot of other YouTubers do it. We're big nerds. We're brothers. It's very funny.
You've got the bit.
Yeah.
But 16 Weeks to Glory remains a really wonderful title for something.
Yeah, it has to, but there has to be something stupid, like objectively ridiculous that we are working hard toward.
Right.
And boxing is a good one, minus the violence. And unfortunately, it's kind of hard to do without the violence.
I don't think any of this can happen until our lives free up a little bit, but I think it should be a good goal to try to make 2023 the year where we could do something like 16 Weeks to Glory in 2024.
Yeah, and also Poop GPT.
Oh my God, Poop GPT is such a good idea. And then like 10 years.
I want it. Like I want it.
I do too. That's the thing. I would be a customer day one.
Yeah. You could put some prebiotic or in there too.
Yeah, whatever, Hank. You know the science. I'm just here to sell it. I'm going to set up a Tumblr that's going to sell the heck out of it. Tumblr is famously amenable to corporate interference. It's one of their favorite things. They love a brand.
I bought a socks ad on Tumblr and I got immediately mad people.
Oh yeah, no, they don't want an advertisement.
Like Tumblr, the site is like, do you want to boost this post with our special crabulous boosts? And I was like, I do. You're right. And then people were like, don't do that, Hank.
Yeah. They're like, wow, nerd. They're
like, we don't want this to be a successful platform.
Don't you understand? Well, we want this company to lose all of its money. I love Tumblr again, man. I'm back in a big way. I love it, Hank. It makes me so happy.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, thanks for potting with me.
Good luck.
I'm sure it'll end great.
Do you want to do the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon?
Oh, right. Oh, Hank, we've got big news from AFC Wimbledon this week, so I'll start.
Okay.
Now, Hank, there is a force in League Two football that we have not talked about in a long time, a powerful, powerful force, arguably the biggest force in the league. It's frozen pitch. Frozen pitch, Hank. There's very little in this world that is as likely to have an undefeated season as frozen pitch. And so AFC Wimbledon's last two games have both been canceled due to frozen pitch. A lot of games around the league have been canceled. Frozen pitch is often in a race with soggy pitch. Soggy pitch is another common reason for a match cancellation. But frozen pitch has had a great season so far. And so AFC Wimbledon have not had a game. But that has not stopped the drama. Okay? So two pieces of absolute stunning news.
Okay.
Neither good.
Oh, no.
First off, our brilliant 20-year-old Moroccan Messi, Ayuba Sal.
Oh, no.
Is leaving.
Just like you said.
Just like I said, he's going to Qatar.
Oh, wow.
A team in Qatar
is that good?
Well, they paid us more money than we've ever been paid for any other player. So I guess it's good in that sense, but it's very sad in the sense that I like Ayuba Sal, and also he was essential to our chances of winning.
Yes.
Since he has not been in the team for January, we have been notably worse. So that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, that's what's up with good at sports people.
Yes.
They make you better at sports.
They always want to go somewhere else. So he has left. It's very sad. I love Ayuba Sal. I wish him well. I hope to see him play for the Moroccan national team at the World Cup in 2026. And I hope to see him see it in real life. That would be a huge thrill for me. However, that is not even the most dramatic news out of AFC Wimbledon this week. The most dramatic news is that Brentford, a Premier League team who loaned us two of their players, they loaned us two of their players, and then they asked for those players back in January, which kind of sucks. Uh-huh. Paris Magoma was the best one. He's a really good midfielder. And it kind of sucked, and we were annoyed because we were like, oh, but we really like him. And Brentford was like, well, life is hard and full of disappointments. He's coming back. Okay, so that happened.
Mm-hmm.
1 week later, guess who Paris Magoma just signed for?
I don't know.
The franchise currently plying its trade in Milton Keynes.
You can't do
Paris
that.
Magoma left us for, I can't even call them our rivals because it's much worse than that.
Yeah.
Paris Magoma went from being one of my favorite Wimbledon players to being the person I like least on earth. And I am in third least on earth behind Tucker Carlson. And he knows who. He knows the other one knows. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
I can't believe Paris Magoma left AFC Wimbledon and a week later signed with Milton Keynes. I cannot believe it. Like,
I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
That's rough.
And then he like did an interview where he was like, oh, it was a no-brainer. Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. It's not going to be welcome, I think it's safe to say, in South London anytime soon. What's the news from Mars? Were you betrayed by a brilliant midfielder this week?
No. News from Mars is quite good and cool.
Okay.
It's really news from Earth, but it's about Mars. So. Yeah. There's a thing that's going to happen for people in parts of North America and Central America. So on Monday, January 30th, which is the day that this comes out, so you got to be quick. Depending on where you are, you will get a chance to see a lunar occultation of Mars, which means that the moon will go in front of Mars. It will block the view of Mars. You can see it. So in the central and northern U.S. And in Canada, you can see the moon go just a little bit below Mars. But in the southern part of the U.S., in Mexico, Cuba, a lot of Central America, you will actually be able to see the moon go across Mars and make it so you can't see Mars anymore.
Wow. So you'll see Mars disappear all at once, probably, if you've got regular
human eyes. Yeah, you can just watch the little dot of Mars go behind the moon and then it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's cool. That's exciting.
Yeah. So there's a handy little guide if you want to see it at space.com. You can search for it. You won't miss it.
Cool. Well, I'll try to get on that.
John.
Yes.
Thank you for making a podcast with me. People of the world, send me your brand ideas
for Poop GPT. For
a powder that I want to take every morning and feel good about it.
Yeah.
You can send your questions and also those to hankandjohn@gmail.com. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunametish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Debuki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.